I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hey friends, it's Laura here. We are bringing you a very special out-of-the-box episode today. We are interviewing each other, and this episode is all focused on Sarah Reitzman, or Reitzwoman, I should say. Sarah is an essayist, fiber artist, nonprofit director, podcast creator, all-around overachiever, and a good friend. I am very excited to hear about all the cool stuff she does. A lot of it I know, but there is a ton I don't know deep within all of the things I do know. And what better way to find out what you don't know than by asking a million questions, which is what I do on this episode. Please enjoy this episode focused on my wonderful co-host, Sarah Reitzman. Hey, Sarah, this is cool. I'm interviewing you.
It is cool. It's a little weird to be on the other side of the interview, but it's pretty cool.
I know. And we also know so much about each other already. It was a fun challenge to come up with a bunch of things that I haven't asked you yet about your creative endeavors. So this is going to be really good.
Yeah, good. I'm excited.
So we're going to start off with a super easy, simple question. What does creativity mean to you?
I think that I wrote this question and I still was not particularly prepared to answer it.
Yeah, I'm joking about it being a little question. That's like a huge, huge
it's
question.
A big, massive question.
And for the record, Sarah did write a couple questions for herself that she wanted to write, but then I wrote a bunch and hid them from her. So a bunch of it, she has no idea what's coming.
Okay, what does creativity mean to me? Because I think of creativity in a bunch of ways, and it's such a broad, gigantic word because a lot of people think about like artists, and then maybe we'll extend that to like, you know, dancers and theater and chefs, but it's all very sort of like the traditional sense of the word. And I really like it extends to any people who are problem solvers or making a difference or interacting with their communities in some way, shape, or form, whether that's for like social change or personal gratification or whatever it is.
And do you think your viewpoint on creativity has changed since doing this podcast?
Yeah, probably yes and no, because I've always considered myself a creative person despite not being necessarily an artistic person or not thinking of myself as an artistic person. But certainly sort of my idea of creativity and most importantly, like why it matters and why it's important has changed or grown or expanded a little bit to fill this creative gut space.
Aw, that's awesome. I feel like it's definitely changed your life a lot as it has opened up new doors for you, new avenues for creativity, which we're going to get to some of those new doors in a bit. But I want to start off with the aspect of creativity that I knew you kind of first, which was writing, because you write heavily for your job. You are a blogger for Stay Work Play. I believe you have two blogs on there, right?
Yeah, I write for two of their columns.
That's awesome. That is a lot. Could you describe your writing and how has it evolved?
It's evolved a lot over the past, I would say, probably two decades. I've always considered myself a writer. And even looking back at when I was a lot younger, even as early as like in my preteens, I think I've always been a writer. And I always thought that I would grow up doing something with writing, which in a way I am. And in a bunch of ways, I'm not. I know my first sort of what I'm going to be when I grow up was a journalist. So I've always been a writer. And I've always been more interested in nonfiction specifically. And there's some sort of key writers that stick out in my head as inspirations, Malcolm Gladwell and Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau were like early inspirations for me as a writer and thinking about what I wanted to do. So I guess I consider myself an essayist in that way. And I don't think I'm like a journalist or a news writer. And I've done some poetry and creative writing, not lately, but mostly now I'm an essayist and I write about sort of communities and politics and housing policies and very kind of like flowery stuff about really important topics.
And that probably helps a lot of folks get informed and be more interested in subjects so that then they want to be more active within those areas, especially where advocacy is needed.
It's definitely been an incredibly handy skill to have through work, not just because I have to do things like grant write to fundraise, but also because I have to do things like message housing well and market it to, you know, big populations or decision makers and be persuasive and tell a compelling story. I've always sort of thought of myself as a storyteller in that way. And so right now I'm writing for, obviously outside of work, I'm writing for the Stay Work Play blog, both the MySpace, which is housing, and the Path to Politics, where I write specifically about local government. And I'm also writing a little bit for Celebrate Durham about Durham, where I live. So it's nice to be able to sort of channel my creativity into having pride for community and advocating for things and, you know, helping businesses and other folks and groups down here.
That's wonderful. I am a tiny bit of a writer myself, but I struggle so much with anything that is nonfiction. I see it as so much more truth, isn't it? Like real information and real facts. And the creativity is more mastering your words to make it appealing and of interest to someone. Whereas with fiction, you can just have your imagination go off the rails. And it's almost easier in a way because you don't have as many limitations on you as far as substance that's out there in the world already.
Yeah, there's definitely two very sort of different skill sets. Like fiction and nonfiction writers tend not to be the same people. There's nothing harder though than writing poetry. That's really like the hardest thing, especially the older you get and the more sort of like closed off you are to being vulnerable and open and like spilling your emotions out on a page. But I mean, I'm married to an aspiring novelist. And so I watch him work on his novel and he's done like 8 chapters. And I think to myself, like, what incredible patience and forethought you have to think that far ahead and be able to plan and do character development and worry about things like continuity. And like the longest thing I've ever produced was like 1,000 words.
Yeah, I have no idea how people do it. Exactly what you're saying about the continuity and just having it all feel like the same piece, especially if it takes you a couple years to write. You know, you kind of change your style and your outlook on how things should turn out. And with poetry, a cousin to that is songwriting. And you have been writing songs lately. You and your husband have been working on the RPM Challenge. What's that been like?
That's true. So I've written a few songs in the past. There's actually a really sweet kind of love story. When I was 23, I moved into this condo in Dover, and my husband, my now husband, was my next door neighbor. And our bedrooms were back to back and shared a wall where, you know, his bed was against one wall and my bed was on the other side of the wall. And it was all very romantic. But I could always hear him. I could always hear him playing guitar. And I knew that he did the RPM challenge and he was a musician. And I was like, I'm going to tell him that I have a crush on him by writing him a song. So I wrote down some stupid lyrics and I emailed them to him and said, hey, remember when we talked about, you know, you turning one of my dumb poems into a song? Like, here you go. And the song was, it was so obvious that I was talking about how I was madly in love with my next door neighbor. So obvious. So he spent a night working on recording. So he spent a night working on recording the song. He put it to music. He changed the lyrics to fit the melody and then reproduced, you know, Sarah's song. And that was like 10 days or so before we officially started dating. So
did he get clued in because of that? Was he kind of on his radar now?
Oh, yeah. He knew. He went all like blushy and flattered and and I remember his roommate telling me that he skipped Ultimate Frisbee that night to like stay and keep working on the song because he wanted to get it done.
Oh, you know that's when it's serious.
Listening to the song for the first time ever was the weirdest thing that's ever happened. Like, I was listening to my lyrics and my, like, neighbor slash future husband's voice. And, like, I don't know. It was just too much.
Have you listened to it recently?
Oh, yeah. I listen to it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. So he wrote me another one for my birthday that year. I must have been 24. It was my 25th birthday. He wrote me a birthday song that was really cute. We had only been dating for like 2 weeks, so the pressure was on for him to get me a gift that wasn't like too amazing, but so he wrote me a song and it was great.
Aw, that's awesome.
And then more recently, I wrote some more lyrics. Something just kind of hit me. I was actually listening to J-May, who is probably one of my favorite musicians, and this, I don't know, something just hit me and I was like, yeah, I should write about that. And so I wrote a song and Aaron started putting it to music and boom, April RPM challenge.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Except I have a very rusty singing voice, so it's a little rough, but that's okay.
Some of the best songs are from that kind of voice, though. That's awesome. It's like real and authentic.
Yeah. Aaron's always trying to teach me how to sing, and I don't understand what he means.
I don't know how to sing. It doesn't stop me, but I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing. It just comes out.
He's talking about, like, notes and rhythm and stuff, and I'm like, I don't really know what any of that means, but it's sweet nonetheless.
That was really nice to hear.
The other person who I owe a lot of my like thinking about writing to, and actually sort of my career in housing, is Matthew Desmond, who is a sociologist, I think at Harvard, or he used to be at Harvard. And he wrote a book called Evicted that is just like this gorgeous, compelling storytelling about people who have been evicted. And it's specific to some place in Wisconsin or somewhere in the Midwest. And it was so beautiful and so poetic. And it was the kind of book that you couldn't put down, but like it was nonfiction and it was factual and there was data in it. And like those two things are just so weird. And so the fact that he was talented enough to marry those two things together, this like can't put down enthralling book and like data about evictions and really compelling and sad and heartbreaking stories, just really good.
Ugh.
So I read that in grad school and, you know, here I am as a nerdy houser.
That's so Sarah. It has emotion and data.
Yeah. My two favorite things. Marry them together.
Oh, my word. Wow. Well, not only are you a writer, but you are a podcaster and a fiber artist. My next question is, because you have so many creative outlets now, do those each battle each other for the spotlight, or do you find that you have a good balance on how you spend your time creatively?
I think I have a pretty good balance. But it's, I think, mostly the credit goes to not me or my ability to balance things, but to sort of the environments in which these things flourish. And so when I'm writing, I need, you know, either quiet space or like ambient noise where I'm, you know, sitting at a coffee shop or I'm in the office and I'm typing and I'm on my computer and it's kind of a different time of day. And mostly I do cross stitch and embroidery and my like fiber arts on the couch in the evening. And so they sort of don't interact with each other that much for exactly that reason. So I guess I'm lucky. Once I added block printing into the mix, though, things started to get a little more fuzzy.
Right. So you started that recently during the quarantine that we're experiencing here in the spring of 2020. Almost hell on earth, it would seem.
Yeah.
But from that, there are little bits of silver lining, like learning a whole new thing. And Sarah Koff, a former Creative Guts guest, did a make along on Instagram. And you had a good time with that?
I did. It was great. Like, huge shout out to Sarah Koff at Sarah Koff Studio. I think what I didn't know and was revealed to me doing her make along is that block printing isn't super hard. And I keep wanting to say ingredients, the supplies are not particularly expensive. So the barrier to entry for block printing is just like absurdly low. There's no reason why everyone in the world can't block print once in their life, because it's really not exclusive at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was fun.
It's so fun. I love it. I do it on linoleum blocks and I've done one wood block. That does get a little bit harder as far as the toughness of the wood. But you can print with a potato, as you mentioned to me before. You could print with anything, you know?
Yeah.
So it's good to see folks like you and others that we know who are utilizing this time to not just wallow, focus on the news, or, you know, just watch endless TV. You know, you're putting your brain power to use and producing something that's awesome. Your block print was so freaking adorable. It was one of the colors that I most associate you with, mustard yellow, which I'm actually wearing right now. And a house, of course. I mean, got to be housing, right?
Yeah, I had to do housing. And it's cool because like this whole coping with COVID theme and this, you know, that we've been talking about on this space. And it's been, I mean, it's been really hard on everyone. It's been really hard on me. And a lot of it is like, I'm trying to make sure that I'm mixing it up and doing fun stuff. But it's been so hard for me to strike a work-life balance because I'm working at home and balancing at home. And my life is at home and my work is at home. And unfortunately, because everything's closed, my restaurant is at home and my gym is at home and my everything is at home. And it's just a little, it's a little much to like balance all of that stuff and try to make sure that you do carve out time for yourself. Like, I could just work all the time, or I could sit all the time, and then, you know, nobody's going to feel good at the end of that. So
you just used a pun in there.
But I feel very lucky. Did I make a pun?
You said carve out. We were just talking about block printing.
Carve out some time for block printing. But
so switching gears here. Fun fact for our guests. Sarah started learning cross stitching and fiber arts a few months prior to me knowing about it, which to me feels like a slap in the face. But it was because she wanted to present with me my Christmas gift for 2019, which was one of her first pieces that she made. So I want to know literally everything, Sarah. Why did you start making? What inspired you? Why didn't you tell me? And how it has changed your life? Go.
Okay. I'll start by saying the piece I gave you for Christmas was my first ever gift. And you can tell because the back looks like garbage. And anybody who cross stitches and embroiders are like, oh, girl, who cares about the back? Or no, your back should be as neat as the front, depending on which side of that camp you're on. But that was my first ever piece. So half of your present was like the cross stitch itself. And the other half was like, surprise, I learned how to cross stitch.
And side note, Sarah did hint to me like 2 weeks prior, like a total, oh, your present. It's got something you're going to be so excited about that has to do with my life and not your life, but you're going to get it. And I could not figure it out. I friggin' loved it so much, but it drove me nuts because I'm the type who opens Christmas presents early because I'm so excited about presents. So it was a great mystery and a wonderful surprise. And I'm so immensely impressed with how much you've just taken off with this. You have produced so much in such a short amount of time. You've exhibited work, you have sold work, and you are making your own patterns. I mean, you are doing all of it, and I'm just like blown away by the momentum that you've done in the last, 6 months? It's been tremendous. So what exactly inspired you from the get-go?
I don't know. And I know that's not a satisfying answer. And it's hard to point to sort of like one thing. I will say that Creative Guts definitely had a lot to do with it. That I felt through doing this and talking to so many different makers and knowing you, I was sort of empowered to find something that worked for me. And I tried a bunch of stuff and I've tried a ton of stuff. And most of it just, I don't know, it didn't feel like me either. In Marsha's episode, we talk about ceramics and how she got out of ceramics because of the like cost and the supplies and the space that you need is really cumbersome. Mm. And I knew that I didn't want something like that. And a lot of stuff felt like that to me. I wanted something that I could work on. I really wanted something that I could work on the couch. I'm not going to lie to anybody. Like, if you want a couch potato task for like, you know, watching TV in the evening, cross stitch is perfect. Like, ask Rachel Jones. She said it too in her episode of Hot Cross Buns. Right. So I can't say that interviewing Rachel didn't inspire it a little bit. Like, you know, getting a look behind the scenes of Hot Cross Buns was definitely part of it. I wish that we had interviewed her after I knew everything that I know now, because there are so many things that I would have asked her about and that I wish that, I mean, I could ask her about it, but it wouldn't be in an episode. Like, I'm sure she'd be happy to respond to my DMs on Instagram.
I think she'd be okay with that.
Yeah. But I guess, like I said, I don't know. I've always been a little bit of a fiber artist. I've always been a sewer. I learned how to sew when I was really young, and I did a little bit of embroidery when I was really young, embroidery that I didn't know was technically embroidery.
Mm.
You know, I would draw on a piece of fabric with a washable marker, and then I would hand stitch over that drawing with, you know, like a running stitch or a back stitch, and then I would wash the marker off. And I don't know, I thought I was just kind of like making something up and it was cool, but I didn't realize that like that's what embroidery is.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing it wrong and I wasn't doing some kid version of it. That's just like legit what it is. So fiber arts felt right to me. And I went and I did a class at Port City Makerspace. It was a cold forging for jewelry class. So I was working with metal and bending metal and hammering metal. And that was also awesome. And I also liked that. The big barrier to that being that I don't have like a space that I can do that at home. So I don't know, something about cross stitch just sort of stuck for a bunch of reasons. And I've ventured into other stitches, other embroidery stitches a bit. I kind of like cross stitch the best, to be honest, mostly because I love the fabric. Embroidery can be done on any fabric, but most of it is, I think, too thin. And I don't like when you can like see through the fabric, or like when you put your needle through and there's little holes, and maybe I'll get better at it. But like, to me, the fabric just kind of irks me a little bit. So cross stitch is great because you do it on this like kind of thick, starchy fabric, and it has these like, you know, teeny little squares. And that's why it's called cross stitch, because you're literally like doing a cross over those squares. And I don't know. It's just... And it's been a combination of stitching other people's patterns and making my own patterns. And either way, it's just really fun.
So is that the main difference between embroidery and cross stitch? Cross stitch is literally cross stitching.
Yes. Yeah. So cross stitch is a kind of a type of embroidery. It's a pretty specific stitch, and it's typically done on different fabrics. And unlike other embroidery stitches, it's harder to mix cross stitch with other stitches. So you can mix cross stitch with back stitch, and you can do them both on Aida. That's what the fabric's called. With other embroidery stitches, there's like a zillion other embroidery stitches. I know like most of my bunnies that I exhibited at Puppy Love at Main Street Art were done with split stitch, which is kind of my, I guess, my favorite embroidery stitch that's not cross stitch. But typically the fabric is different too. And you can embroider on anything, whereas you kind of can't cross stitch on anything.
Interesting.
Although you technically can.
So you can break all the rules.
Yeah, you use this like gridded wax papery crap, and then you stitch over the squares just like you would stitch over cross stitch, and then you rip the like weird backing off. I know.
That sounds
Anyways,
painful.
I really want to stitch the back of my jean jacket, and I have a design in my mind already, so I need to buy some of that crap.
That's awesome. Oh, that's so cool. I feel like if I was to get into one of them, which I would never truly really dive into one of them, because I think you need an immense amount of patience that for some reason that area, I have patience in other things, but I just don't think I have it in the fiber arts world. But if I did, I think embroidery, like I like the messy stitching, and I like the more abstracted alternative process vibe of it. Although I just love embroidery and cross stitch. You know, I follow tons of artists on Instagram, you know, and I think you've introduced me to some, and it's like the ones that kind of think outside the cloth, you know, those are the ones I'm more drawn to, like the ones with the women's hair coming out and it's just the threads and, you know, stitching on tulle.
Yeah. And there's also,
so beautiful.
Yeah. See, I would hate that. It would drive me crazy, because if you stitch on tulle, then you can see the back, which means your back has to be like super immaculate. And I just suck at that. The back is nobody's business. It's just nobody's business. The back is where the knots are at. Like, just mind your own business and look at the front, you know, whatever.
It's kind of like the artist palette in a way, where you don't see the palette, you see the painting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And there's also something called needle painting, and I don't think I'd ever necessarily try this, but some of the embroideries that like you've DM'd me on Instagram are really like needle painting, which is like a super cool, and like you can really like, it's more like painting, obviously, needle painting. You can really like blend and make things kind of cohesive and cool. It's really awesome. There's definitely...
It's amazing.
And embroidery is so easy, because you can just... On any piece of fabric, and you can use almost any piece of fabric, you just draw whatever you want with a washable fabric marker, and then you stitch over it with whatever stitch you want, and then like, boom, that's it, you're done.
Wow.
You just like wash off the fabric marker, and like, you can do anything. So you're right, it's a lot more flexible, whereas cross stitch is a little bit more rigid, because you're working with, you know, those crosses. So everything's going to look pixelated with cross stitch, unlike, you know, embroidery, where you can do smooth curved lines.
Right.
I don't know, they're both great.
Oh, they are. They're amazing. Now, so you do patterns and you make your own patterns or follow other folks' patterns with cross stitch, part A, what's it like making your own patterns? And part B, can you make patterns for embroidery or just cross stitch?
You can make patterns for embroidery, but they're more like just drawing and illustration.
Okay.
So I've made some embroidery patterns before. I actually made one that I am making for you for your birthday. But you take either a drawing or a picture, or you draw something, or you can do it on like Procreate. Mm-hmm. And then you, so any of your drawings that you wanted turned into an embroidery, I could totally do that. And then the best way to do it is to put it either on top of a like a light box or like a tracing box, so it's backlit. Put it on there and then put the fabric on top of it and then just trace your drawing right onto your fabric and then you can stitch it. That's easily the best way to do it, and it's fantastic. If you wanted to make an embroidery pattern and then put it on something that's not see-through, so you can't use the tracing box, you can either freehand it right on the cloth if you're like, awesome, cool, or you can use that like weird wax papery crap and like draw it on there and then transfer it over and then stitch over it and then rip the wax paper off. It's really bizarre.
So I just got an idea, Sarah.
Yeah.
Want to do a collab?
Sure.
So what we should do, because now I know this, is I should give you a piece of my art and you turn it into a cross stitch. And you should give me one of your cross stitches and I turn it into a painting.
Done. Love it.
We'll have two interpretations we each make based off of the other's original piece.
Love it. I love it. Let's do it.
Okay, cool. We're doing it.
Mark our words, creative guts. It's happening.
Yeah. That's how the Becky Barcy collab that I'm still not quite done with, but I'm working on.
You and Sarah Koff promised to collab too in her episode.
We did. I know. I need to reach out to her. She's just she's a steam engine too. She's doing so much, but that would be lovely to collab with her as well.
No rush. We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. I've been making lots of art, but none of it's been block printing at all because all that's at my studio and there's only so much I could bring back to my apartment without making a mess.
Yep. And you asked about cross stitch pattern making too. That's really fun. And I do it in a bunch of different ways. I do have a computer software I can do it with where you're literally just like filling in the dots. And that's really awesome. There's also like, you know, you can print out graph paper that's specific to your Ada size and you can do it that way. And that's really fun too. I can kind of turn anything into a cross stitch pattern. Some things are a little outside of like my particular skill range, but I'll get there. Mm-hmm. Like anything that involves too much blending is just a little bit too hard, but I'll get there.
So how long does it take? I know this is nebulous, I guess, because it depends on the size and the, you know, subject matter. But I guess ratio wise, if you're making a pattern, what percentage is doing the pattern out on the paper? And then what percentage is the actual stitching?
It depends on what I'm starting with. So if I'm starting with a drawing, so like, for example, I made a pattern over the weekend of Kirby, the, you know, video game character.
Yeah.
And that was really easy because all I had to do was pull a picture of Kirby off of the internet. I put it into my program. I touched it up a lot and changed the coloring and like did a bunch of touch-ups to it. And then I added some font to it so I could put a silly saying with it. And all in all, it was like probably an hour and a half to do that versus if I'm creating something from scratch or from my head, it's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah.
And I love working from pictures for reference, but sometimes I can just make stuff up.
And then I imagine the actual stitching takes way longer.
Oh yeah, stitching takes forever. I assume at some point you're going to ask me about like the possibility of monetizing. Anybody like, you know, total like hats off to Rachel Jones and Hot Cross Puns. There is just so little money in selling finished objects of cross stitches because they take so unbelievably long. So if I did a cross stitch, just particularly a big one, and then actually like charged minimum wage per hour, nobody would ever buy it because it would be like $150.
That's so sad.
That little New Hampshire that I did for the cross stitch tutorial for Creative Guts took me literally like 3.5 or more hours. And that was just like a tiny little thing in a 4-inch hoop.
Hats off to you.
Yeah.
Again, with the patience.
Yeah. It's nice because I get kind of attached to just doing it. Like the motion of stitching is really nice and sort of relaxing and methodical. Ooh. And I can totally just like, you know, zone into what I'm watching. And biggest bonus is that I can't snack, so I can watch TV, but I can't eat anything because my hands are busy stitching. And that's really nice. Stitching That's is a good. Diet. I didn't know that.
What you were saying about the rhythm and motion of it is reminiscent of Rose Bryant from our first episode talking about the movement of mark making, and just, you know, sometimes she focuses on making bigger marks and smaller marks, and whereas your marks probably aren't too varied right. from one to the other because you're you know, stitching, it's still that rhythm kind of gives you a neat thing to be a part of.
Yeah, it's so true. And most people who do monetize cross stitch as sort of an art do it by selling patterns, which is cool. So if you're a good pattern maker, then great. There's a lot of, I don't want to say drama, but there's a lot of drama. There's a lot of, like, I belong to the cross stitch subreddit and a cross stitch Facebook group, and there's a ton of, like, drama and controversy around, like, possible copyright issues and, like, people stealing each other's patterns, which is so not different from all other artists and all other types of art. But all of my patterns are free. So if anybody was ever scrolling my Instagram and saw a pattern, assuming it's an original one that I made and not something that I purchased from another designer, you're welcome to just, like, comment on it or message me, and I will just send you my pattern if I have it, because, like, I am, you know, pouring my heart into making these things. I don't have any real interest in making a profit off of them, although I did post one on Etsy as just a test and sold one and was like, oh crap, I'm not gonna, like,
what? Yeah. You didn't tell me that. When was that?
Today. I literally made a sale on Etsy today, and I was like, oh no, I'm not gonna like making a profit off of it, am I? So I don't know. But I marked them all as super cheap because what I really want to do is give them away. I want people to have them. They're art, and art belongs to the whole world, not just me. And I don't know. That's silly.
And it's a real cool feeling to, you know, which I think Emily Slama had mentioned, and I think Rachel had mentioned, you know, having little bits of something you created all over the world or the country is a really cool feeling. You know, you've infected someone else's life with happiness and joy so much so that they need to display it. That is very powerful.
It's so true. And stitching is such a commitment because of the time that it takes and, to some extent, the material that it takes. You know, if you're low on fabric, there's no way you're going to stitch a pattern that you're only, like, half into. So in the Facebook group that I belong to, lots of people drop their patterns in the files and they're free to members of the group. It's amazing. I love it so much. It's a secret group at the moment, so otherwise I would totally plug it and tell you all to join. Sorry. Should have gotten in before the door closed.
What a VIP embroiders cross stitch group you have. How many members are there in this group?
I don't know, 17,000 or so.
Not that exclusive.
Yeah, I know. Well, they closed it because they were getting too many people wanting to join, and they were like, it was overwhelming. Yeah. I don't know. They probably just need to add more like mods or admins so they can get it open up again. But, like, I dropped my pattern in there, and then somebody stitched my pattern.
Oh, that's so cool. So you said something that I am curious about. It's actually one of my questions for later. Are there pieces that you start and don't finish, either due to them not turning out correctly how you envisioned them? I mean, you have a pattern, so you have a clear vision, and if you follow it, in theory, it becomes what it should become. Or maybe from a lack of interest, do you stop working on a piece? You know, do you ever get blocked with cross stitch and embroidery?
Yes and no. So I've had a couple pieces so far that I had one that I had to just toss because I measured the fabric correctly, but I didn't orient it correctly. So it was landscape instead of being portrait. So I ran out of fabric in the middle of the pattern, which is literally, like, the worst feeling ever. And instead of frogging it, which is the term that we use for ripping. Seriously.
Getting into the nitty gritty lingo of the underbelly of embroidery.
Instead of frogging it, I literally just threw it in the trash. I was like, no, I'm mad at you. And it went in the trash. But other than that, it's the only one that I've ever started and never finished. There was one for a long time that I started and I had an idea in my head of what I wanted it to look like. And I just didn't love it. And I wish that I had brought it to the meet and critique, because I feel like somebody could have been like, oh, do this and you'll love it. But I just... And it's finished right now, and I haven't, like, trimmed the fabric or whatever, so I could still do stuff too if I wanted to. But I just don't know what I want to do to it, or if I want to do anything to it, or if I might like it. I'm just not sure.
Yep.
But that's the only one that I got totally blocked on. I've definitely started ones that I wasn't particularly interested in finishing, but I just chugged through it anyways.
Oh my God, God bless you. I'm very much a start it and stop it, throw it away type of girl with my art. I mean, in any discipline, including music, you know, anything, I'll just be like, okay, I'm done. And I might revisit it, or it's just in the trash bin. It's donezo, you know.
I think I have a hang up with wasting stuff. Like, I try to live a sort of like minimalist, not wasteful life. And so to me, there's sort of like a disconnect between being an artist or a creator or a crafter and being sort of like environmentally friendly, not wasting materials. And so I get kind of like anxious about it. And that's why I have to finish everything I start. And the hardest thing, and the thing I think I resent the most in general about creating anything, is now I have this finished project and like, what do I do with it if I don't love it and I don't want it? And luckily, I reached out to my, like, I'm in a zero waste Facebook group, and I reached out to them, and they put me in connection with an art abandonment Facebook group, which is literally people who abandon their art out in public with a little tag that says, this is free art, please enjoy. And that is my, like, you know, get out of jail free card to, you know, whatever with my finished objects that I don't care about.
That's adorable. Oh my gosh. So someone just goes and finds it and becomes the new owner?
Yep.
It's like geocaching for art.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And every now and then, if you're really lucky, there's instructions. There's a little like card you can print out, and there's instructions like go to this art abandonment Facebook group and like post what you found. So every now and then, the person who abandoned it and the person who found it can like connect and like, aww, or at least even if you don't reveal yourself as the artist, you can still see the person who found your art and what they thought about it.
Yeah. Aww. That's freaking adorable.
So that's my weird hang up with not finishing what I start, but it's, I need to get over it. It's really silly.
Yeah, I wouldn't say silly. That's you doing you, but you might feel a bit more freedom and less anxious. And though you might be wasting something physically, I think mentally and emotionally, you're learning something from every mistake. So there's at least that. And sometimes I feel like creativity is just a winding weird path. It's just a weird winding road and it's not always straight. So sometimes that those huge roadblocks where you f up, it's really a blessing because if you jump to the next thing, that could be your next, you know, quote unquote masterpiece. Whereas if you
yeah, but okay, but they don't feel that way in the moment.
No, it feels like shit. It feels terrible. Wait, especially when you've sunk 12 hours into an illustration and then, you know, I have so many unfinished illustrations on Procreate that maybe I'll go back to someday, but most likely not. And at least with Procreate, aside from the energy I'm consuming, I'm not wasting materials. So that's nice.
Yeah, that's how I feel about creating patterns. And I am loving creating patterns. I wouldn't say more than I love cross-stitching, but almost as much as I love cross-stitching. And I have to have at least a dozen patterns now that I personally have never stitched. Other people have, so at least I get to see what the finished object looks like, but I just haven't done it.
That's awesome. That's so good. It's like a different gear of your creativity, you know, you're turning multiple gears. So I can't interview you without talking a little bit about being a podcaster because Meta, here we are. Our friend.
I'm just going to defer to my co-host. Oh,
she's not here. You know, our friendship was certainly there prior to this, but it very much bloomed in response to this because we spent so much time together. We were both passionate about telling stories and creativity, which is the essence of Creative Guts. So what has Creative Guts done for you? I mean, obviously it gave you embroidery and it has opened you up to a whole new network of creatives, but how has it affected you and what has it opened up for you in your brain, you know?
What an easy question. I should be able to answer this no problem. You should save it for the rapid round. Okay. So I think I'll talk about both sort of like what it's meant for me and how like outcomes that have come out of this, like sort of the outputs, but I'll also sort of talk about like what it's meant for me personally. And I want to start with the outputs. That's just like less gushy. since starting the podcast, I have learned how to edit audio, which is something I didn't think I'd ever know how to do. I have learned how to cross stitch. Sort of indirectly because of the podcast, I've also learned how to block print. And more recently, I have learned how to edit video.
Yeah.
And for somebody who's like, yeah, whatever, I'm an artist, I already know how to do all those things. Cool. I didn't know how to do anything before this podcast. And to me, those things felt insurmountable. And I already talked a little bit about sort of the barrier to entry. And as somebody who's not an artist, who never considered themselves an artist and didn't have that much exposure or experience to the arts, like I took art classes in, you know, elementary school and middle school and high school, but that was really it. And like beyond the traditional public standardized art program, I just didn't have any experience or exposure to the arts. I do have a couple projects from like eighth grade art class that I thought were the bomb. But aside from that, and as a result, I always felt intimidated. Like, yeah, I could learn how to cross stitch or I could learn how to oil paint or whatever, but I don't even know where to start. Like, I don't know what supplies to buy. I don't know how to do it. I don't even know. And there's like a point where you know so little about something that you don't even know how to find out how to know the thing that you don't know. And what this podcast did for me was expose me to a bunch of different mediums, a bunch of different people, and albeit there are still a couple of folks that we've interviewed that I just have no idea what they're talking about because they're like thing, like Scott Kukler, I'm looking at you, they're like thing that they do is so far outside of my like realm of expertise that I just don't know. But what this did for me was like lower that barrier to entry, that it's not that intimidating. And now that I have sort of the confidence because I've learned how to do one thing, now I'm like, oh, maybe I could figure out how to do this other thing. And then I have more confidence and I feel more empowered. Oh, maybe I can learn how to do this other thing. Oh, maybe I can learn how to do this other thing.
Yeah.
And like, obviously that's really cool for me, but I really hope that for our listeners, it also lowers that barrier to entry. Like this is such an appropriate time to be talking about how we live in this like globally connected world where we all like chat with each other on the internet and the internet has like every resource you could ever want it to have. And like, we're all stuck at home, you know, relying on the internet to connect each other. But like literally even as simple as doing Sarah Koff's tutorial on like how to block print was just incredible in lowering the barrier to entry. She taught me what supplies I needed and talked about what the supplies were for and then taught me how to do it. And all of a sudden, you know, I bought the supplies and they weren't that expensive. And then I went through her video and I was like, oh, it's not that hard. And now I have just enough skill to like practice and get better and like do it. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
And then I turned around and I'm like, oh, maybe I can edit video. Like that's something I've always wanted to do. And like, whatever, I could totally do that. So now I'm doing that too. It's just cool how that all snowballs.
It's like one art is the gateway drug into all the other arts that you could want to pursue.
Yeah. But like coming from somebody who never thought that they could ever do any of this. Like, I mean, duh, you've said this 1,000 times. I don't know why I never listened to you. But like you weren't born with this like raw art talent. You learned how to do art over a number of years.
I worked my butt off. And I think I, you know, was fortunate that I had the snowball effect when I was younger. And that I just always would figure out what I needed to figure out. So that's just always sort of been in my life. But we'll get more to that on the episode where you interview me.
Yeah. I'm also developing, Aaron's here and he's going to like scoff at me. I'm also developing a little bit of sort of a sense of patience. I've only been doing cross stitch for... I started at the end of November, so it hasn't been that long. It's been months. And I feel like over that time, I've sort of learned the basic skills. And then when I learn the basic skills, it's like, okay, I learned how to crawl. And then I really should have started walking, but instead I started running. And then I realized like, okay, you need to slow down and start walking first and then like build yourself up to running. But I'm learning to be a little bit more patient and learn how to walk before I run and learn how to do more things. It's okay to not quite be ready yet or like to not be there yet.
That's a great lesson that I still still haven't learned with anything new I try. I try to run immediately pretty much. So, you know, and that's why I toss things out sometimes. So that's a good lesson.
It sucks to like try to run and then just like absolutely suck at it. Mm. And then what? You get frustrated and you give up. It's like, okay, I'm going to try not to be the person who like gets frustrated and gives up and never tries cross stitch again because of that one time I was frustrated. So
yeah,
it's a very valuable,
that's a good lesson.
Very valuable lesson for me.
Yes.
And you know, beyond just what the podcast has done for me, it's also, I mean, I should start by saying, like, when this podcast first started, my motivation was really that I was in Leadership Seacoast, class of 2019, best class ever. And I was there kind of for work. And I put that in air quotes. I was there for work, to network, to learn, to like be a bigger part of my community and learn about all these things that we learn about. By the way, if anybody's interested in doing Leadership Seacoast, I'll buy you coffee and tell you about it. It's really the best. But it was also like I wanted to find something. I wanted my life to not just be about my job and not just be about. And I think part of this was that I've always been a little bit of a workaholic, which is easy for me because I've always loved what I did. I really haven't had a job that I hated since like 2012. Like I've just had amazing jobs. And so it was easy for me to be a little bit of a workaholic and fall into this thing that I love because I loved it and because I was in school for so many years of my adult life that I don't know, I was just sort of used to working at this capacity where I was never doing anything for myself. So I went into Leadership Seacoast and I thought, I want to learn something for myself. I want to do something for me. And it was Arts and Culture Day happened, program day of Leadership Seacoast, Arts and Culture Day. And you were like, let's do a podcast. And I was like, yeah, those two things totally make sense to me. Like those two things really clicked and connected. And like being able to have something that's outside of my like housing hat is so cool and so like rewarding and feels like I have a hobby. Like what? Now when people are like, what do you do for fun in your free time? I'm not like, what kind of stupid question is that?
I stare at my bunny endlessly.
I always used to hate that question. I'm like, first of all, I don't have free time. Second of all, even if I did, I'd be like sleeping or something because I'm exhausted. I don't know. But now I have something for me.
And you can gush about creative guts.
Exactly. Gush about creative guts. And of course, it's about way more than just me. I know that like you and I are both like, oh, selfishly, this podcast is just all about us. Mm-hmm. But Creative Guts has also been a way to like create a community and like contribute to the like, you know, the art scene of New Hampshire, of the Seacoast, of, you know, kind of globally a little bit, and like connect with people and they connect with each other. And so seeing like, you know, Raphael Bastak and Mike Durkee meet each other and connect because of the podcast and collaborate, and like Sarah Duclos and, you know, Becky Barcy reconnect after not seeing each other for a while and collaborate on a project. And it's like, because we're bringing people together and it's so neat.
It actually worked, what we're doing. I know. It worked in a way.
Yeah, wait, what was the point of this thing? I think we did it.
I know. It's pretty humbling when you think about the bigger scope of it. And it really is just selfish reasons. We want to learn about creativity, share it, you know, meet all these cool folks, and especially all the different creative avenues that we're not involved in, just picking their brains. It, you know, kind of to what you were saying, it makes it a little less intimidating. So if you're interested in it, you know, like the whole acting aspect with a few of our past guests, like I'm still incredibly afraid of that, but it makes it a tiny bit more accessible that if I ever do it, now I have some resources of some people I can go to and be like, help, how do I do this? You know,
it's so true. It's totally a confidence builder. And it's also neat to see people who are, I don't want to call them famous, and they're all sort of like, ha ha ha, we're not famous. But like to us, a lot of these people are like, I don't know, local famous. Like, I mean, we got Emmett Soldati, the Emmett Soldati on the podcast, and being able to talk to them and ask them questions that are disarming and human, like even as simple as like, what's your favorite smell? Like that's such a silly question. And I know what so many people's favorite smells are now. I can still tell you that Emily Slama's favorite smell is pumpkin. And like, I know that about her because we are like, you know, beautiful connected humans now because we've had this really vulnerable and deep and amazing conversation that you wouldn't necessarily have if the microphones weren't there. Mm-hmm. You could, but you wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. I know. You would honestly think that putting a microphone in front of somebody would make them stiff and they have to be, you know, completely rehearsed and everything they say is going to come out like sound bites. And maybe it is for the first 30 seconds, maybe a minute, but the armor totally comes down if it ever was even there. And I think aside from the headphones and mic, like people really do kind of forget that that's the purpose of what we're doing. So we're just shooting the breeze with some of these creatives and it feels like we could talk for hours. There's so much content to get through and to learn about them. And it feels like a genuine conversation, you know?
Yeah, that's totally us. We disarm them with our like hilarious antics and how adorable we are.
The secret is we actually become the biggest dorks in the world. And they're like, well, I can't sound as goofy as these two, so I'll be fine. And that has been our plan, I think, at least for me. I sometimes tell a terrible joke, the one about Napoleon, and it just works because they're like, this girl, not going to sound that bad.
Hey, Laura, can you remind me where Napoleon keeps his armies? I can't remember.
In his sleeveys.
Oh my God. That joke was funny. And then it circled all the way back to being funny again. So funny. I just laughed at that joke.
I friggin' love that joke so much.
No, but it's really true. We got all like awkward and nerdy and we're like, we have to take a selfie now. God, and like, I know. Just be it's awkward so embarrassing and weird about it.
Silly we are sometimes. Oh, it is. It's awesome.
But it totally works.
It's so great. So we are going into rapid fire question
rapid
time.
Fire.
Because it's been 55, almost 60 minutes. So,
wow.
Tis time. I know. It flies right by.
I feel also, like I've only answered like two questions.
I know. Well, you know what? There's like three or four I didn't even ask. And
oh,
I want
my
to.
Gosh.
But I'm not going to be spending 10 years of my life editing. Just
you,
one
you can
year.
Ask me later.
Okay. Yeah.
Text me, Laura.
Yes. Because I don't talk to you enough as it is.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you some standard rapid fire questions. I think you know what rapid fire questions are, and I think you're going to know some of the ones I'm going to ask because you heard them. But I have a secret document with a bunch of questions you've never heard of and never would know were coming.
You sneaky bitch. So are rapid fire questions right. Rapid? Am I supposed to answer them quickly? I can't remember how this goes.
Oh my gosh. I wish I could punch my phone right now and it would go right to you. Little.
I'm sorry. You're being a terrible host. This is the worst podcast what? I've ever been on.
I am offended. Hey, Sarah, what's your favorite color?
It's a three-way tie between orange, yellow, and green. I'm sorry. I kind of like purple too, but it really comes in like second place.
All the colors. That is a terror. You just did not go rapid.
Okay,
that's awful.
Okay, fine. It's a tie between orange and yellow and green.
Okay. What's your favorite taste?
I really love the intersection of, this is so silly. I love the intersection of spicy and like tart sour and like umami savory. So I want to say tom yum soup, which like encompasses all three of those tastes. That's really like where I'm at.
Wow. All right. You put some thought into it. Favorite smell?
Ooh, I feel like I know the answer to this.
I mean, it's your answer. You should know.
I love the smell of coffee. I also kind of like the smell of hay from having a bunny and having my house just sort of smell like hay all the time. It's just really nice.
Yeah. Little Luna bug. What's your favorite texture?
Cat paws.
To touch.
Cat paws. My favorite texture. Luna is really soft and wonderful, so she's definitely in the running. I'm also a huge fan of my weighted blanket. That feels really nice when I'm sleeping.
And favorite sound?
Church bells.
Nice.
Easily, church bells, yeah.
Yeah, that's fitting.
I grew up in a house really, yeah, I know, right? I grew up in a house, we actually can't hear, so for those of you who don't know why that's fitting, I live inside a church. I actually can't hear the church bells of this church from inside my apartment. I have to go outside to hear them. But I grew up in a house that was very close to a church and I could hear the church bells every Sunday at 11.
Aww.
And then I went to UNH for 6.5 years, so I could always hear the church bells and I loved that. So they're not church bells, I'm sorry, the UNH bells, whatever.
But bells, they're still bells.
Bells.
Sarah, what is your favorite flower or plant?
Sunflowers.
Aw.
Unless you're including vegetables, then I'm going to need a million years to think about it.
Okay. Well, we'll around, you know, next time I interview you, we'll come back to that. This one is going to be tough to be brief. What would your dream house look like?
Well, for those of you who have followed along with my blog posts on Stay, Work, Play, you know that I, you know, categorize myself as a bit of a rural millennial. I would really like a small house that is, I don't know, I guess I care more about the like land outside of the house than the house itself. I want a small house that's bright and clean and like, you know, not too terribly hard to upkeep and not too terribly expensive to upkeep. But I want it to be on like a nice plot of land with like, you know, some place to throw a frisbee around, some place to have a garden, a little place where maybe I could build an accessory dwelling unit for my mom to live in, and a little place where I could build a little like outdoor like porch thing that I could let Luna out on so she could get some fresh air.
It's very utilitarian for all of the aspects of your life, especially outside. That, again, feels like a you answer. Yeah.
Yeah. And I need an office with a closet. That's really all I really care about as far as the inside of the house. Like a good kitchen and an office with a closet. And I say office with a closet because I keep my clothes in my office instead of in my bedroom so that when I wake up before my husband, I don't wake him up when I'm trying on 80,000 outfits and leaving them all over the floor.
Makes sense. Absolutely. Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Night owl, 100%. I have to actively work to be an early bird. And this quarantine pandemic nonsense is just destroying my sleep schedule.
Oh, yeah.
It's so much harder to wake up at 7 when I don't have to be at an office.
Yeah, me too. It's been very challenging.
Yeah.
What is the wallpaper on your cell phone?
Oh, it's a picture of Luna, obviously.
Oh, I guess that's a duh.
Hold on, answer. Let me show you.
I probably knew that.
Bam, bunny.
But our listeners didn't. Oh, and she's so cute.
The picture on my cell phone is also what I traced to get my bunny tattoo on my arm. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Little Luna hopping onto your arm.
Little Luna.
If you could eliminate one thing from your daily routine, what would it be?
Driving.
Oh, well, that's worked. You're not doing that right now.
Yeah, I know. Oh, crap, you're right. I still want to go places, though. So Mike Durkee of Durkish Delights asked on his Facebook page a couple days ago what superpower you would have if you could have a superpower, and I said teleportation.
Yeah.
I am incredibly serious about, one, being efficient. Driving's a huge waste of my time. Mm-hmm. And two, I hate driving. Did I mention that I don't like driving? I would love to just be able to teleport wherever I go. Boom, efficient, super fast, whatever.
You can see the world in the blink of an eye. I know.
Exactly.
I would love to teleport too.
Right? Like, want to spend the day on the islands? Like, boom, teleport. You can spend the day there. You don't even have to fly and you don't have to take a vacation day and whatever.
Mine's more that I am a terrible traveler as far as my body gets violently sick when I'm traveling on a plane or train or someone else driving. A lot of times I get very sick. So I still travel and I just get sick and I suck it up. But, you know, it'd be nice.
So teleportation it is then.
Let's just invest our money in that for the future.
Hold on, let's cure coronavirus first.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff we should cure too. Okay, we'll do that. And our clincher question that you've heard at least 30 times now, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
So much advice. Young Sarah made a lot of bad decisions, mostly, well, partially as a result of things that were outside of my control, like childhood trauma, but mostly because I was just so anxious all the time and so worried about the future. And I wish that I had just like chilled out a little bit and like known that everything was going to work out. Like if I had just been more relaxed and just had more faith that everything was going to be fine and everything was going to work out. I think my biggest sort of insecurity when I was younger was that I never knew what I wanted to do when I grew up. You know, I had some like ideas. There was a while where I wanted to be a journalist. There was a while where I wanted to be a lobster woman, true story. There was a time when I wanted to do public health stuff, which is what I went to school for. But I never really knew how what I wanted to study translated into what I wanted to do or what I really saw myself doing. And if I hadn't been so stressed out about that, I could have really like enjoyed my early 20s a lot more than I did. And surprise, I ended up somewhere amazing that I love, and I never at any point need needed to, quote unquote, know what I wanted to do. I just ended up there. So if I had just sort of trusted that process and let myself like experiment and get there in my own time, then I probably would have been a lot happier.
I know. Hindsight is 20/20 with that. I think that that's been a common answer with a lot of folks. And I think we all kind of suffer from this societal anxiety of the product, not the process, you know, and that's a tough lesson to learn.
Yep. I am significantly more chill and less controlling and like a lot less just like, you know, anxious and impatient about everything now than I used to be. And it's really good to be there. So,
yeah. And it's good to have you on the Creative Guts podcast with me.
Oh my gosh, it was so good to be here. Maybe I'll start actually listening to the episodes now.
She jokes she has to, folks. It's her job. That we don't get paid for.
Oh, you're not getting paid?
Oh, weird. You are?
Awkward. Stay tuned for our zine.
Yeah. Cool. Oh my God. I know. I'm so pumped for that. Yeah. Making a zine, doing events, giving lectures on this. This has definitely grown. The Creative Guts has definitely grown into something I think bigger than what we either imagined. And who the heck knows where it's going to go, you know?
Agree.
It's so awesome.
Agree. It could be like a full-fledged creative community someday.
I know. That'd be really cool. I think...
We can dream.
Yeah. Well, I am so glad that you said yes to me when I asked, want to start a podcast? And I'm so proud of the transformation that you have had the last 9-10 months of this process. I think you are connecting with a whole nother community you never realized you would connect with. And I think it's made you a happier person. I feel like I can see that in you. And I think I'm imagining it helps you connect with Aaron.
Yeah.
In a different way too.
Definitely a little bit.
Which I think is really special.
He's very sort of, I don't want to say secretive, but he's very sort of like private about his art process. But it's been pretty amazing to be able to collaborate on things. I'm assuming by the time this episode comes out, people will already know this. But Aaron and I are working on a parody video of The Shining. So for folks who haven't seen the movie, a caretaker lives in a hotel with his family all alone. I won't spoil the ending for you, but it's scary as crap. And I don't do scary movies, so this was a really big deal that we watched it. But we are currently isolated in a giant empty building, just like in The Shining. So we are going to pull some like... We're going to pull some important scenes, you know, when you're a caretaker of a giant building and during a pandemic, you reenact The Shining. So we're going to pull some scenes and like tweak them for us and COVID-19 and make a little like video. And the only reason
we can do that. And now that you're a video editor.
Exactly. The only reason we can do that is because now I know how to edit video. So.
So friggin' cool. I love it. That's awesome.
Laura. You did a great job interviewing me today.
So I don't just rest on my laurels and let you do all the work when we interview folks.
Oh my gosh.
Bitch.
Eye roll.
Oh,
no,
hey.
You're a wonderful interviewer.
You can't hear it, but an audience is clapping for me right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
And what's more amazing to me is that I pushed the correct button that I wanted to push on the broadcaster.
I don't believe you, but I guess I'll never know.
You will, because you'll hear this episode. You are going to listen. Because you have to.
No.
Yes.
I have to. Okay.
All right. So thank you for being a guest on this show. I know it was so hard to take time out of your schedule to fit me / us in, but this, you know, the silver linings coming out of this whole quarantine thing are we get to do stuff like this. Keep doing the awesome stuff that you're doing, Sarah Reitzman. And with that,
show us your creative guts.
And just like the intro, I am doing this segment all by my lonesome. What a great episode. I love asking questions about why people do what they do. And even though I spend so much time with Sarah, there's still so much I did not know about her art and her creativity. And I think it's amazing what she has done. It was one of the best Christmas presents, actually, when she started doing cross stitch. and didn't tell me, and then surprised me with not only an amazingly sweet, beautiful gift, but just the fact that she dove into a creative endeavor like that and was so pumped and knew I would be so excited that she kept it a surprise. It was a wonderful gift. If you aren't following Sarah on Instagram, why don't you go over and do that? Because then you can see all of the cool stuff she's working on, plus a million adorable bunny photos from her bunny Luna at Rights Woman. So that is WRIGHTS Woman. And if you want a quick link to her Instagram, feel free to head on over to facebook.com/creativegutspodcast or at Creative Guts Podcast on Instagram. And of course, you can listen to more episodes of Creative Guts on creativegutspodcast.com or wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. We appreciate you listening so much. It has definitely been an interesting challenge adapting to our podcast schedule around the pandemic situation, and we are making it work. So let us know what you think. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope that you have found some inspiration from this episode. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Creative Guts.
Was there a delay?
There was, and I just waited
we'll just
a
line
second.
It up.
Well, no, I think
was it
I,
good for you?
What? Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right, Sarah, the scariest part. You need to stop your recording and save it.
Or, no, your back should be as front as the neat, depending on... As neat as the front, depending on which side of that camp you're on. Getting a closer look at the inside of hot cross buns. Hot cross puns. Getting... Oh, God damn, Rachel. Luna's playing with a paper bag on the floor.
Oh, she has to make an entrance on this episode, doesn't she?
Aaron, Luna's playing with your paper bag. No, I
always
just wanted
had
you to
that.
Know.
Whoa, where'd you go? I looked away for a second and then I looked up and you were gone. And with that, 3, 2, 1.
Show us your creative guts. We suck.
I said it. You didn't. Was there a delay? What the heck?
There must have been a delay. All right, let's try
that
again.
That's weird.